You have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here with another episode of the Business Broker Growth Show. Today I have with me Robin Brown. She is a business broker intermediary with Murphy Business Sales in Central Houston, Texas. Robin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me.
I am excited just based on the conversations we've had, the things that have come up, things that came up right before we hit record. There's two parts I hope we can fit into our conversation today. About new brokers and recruiting them, but also the role of AI and where that's taking part in things. But for people tuning in, a little bit of context for you. So you spent years in a previous life, let's say in previous corporate life world, working in hospitality, setting up hotels, resorts, restaurants. You also worked for big corporate technology company, and then at some point transitioned into this and with Murphy and in the business brokerage world. I know in 2023, you won a top producer award, 2025 multi-million dollar club member. You focused on doing a lot and then helping Murphy with growth and also advocacy and education to members and brokers everywhere. So let's start, I think, because there's a lot for us to talk about. One of the things that's interesting for you is you were in hospitality management. And it's interesting too, because I mentioned that I live in Southwest Florida and you're like, oh yeah, that's right. I moved there at one point in that area to help a resort get launched. So talk about that season of your life. And specifically, like, I guess the part of it too, I'm curious is that season of your life in hospitality management relative to now as well. So tying it into, you know, why is that helpful as part of your journey?
Well, Jason, you know, first and foremost, I got to move to Florida and from the suburbs of Detroit in November, and where the sun shines about 10 hours for the whole month. So to move there in the grayest time in Michigan to sunny Florida, I think, I don't even think I asked how much they were going to pay me. It was, they're going to pay me in sunshine. So there were some incentives. I had spent time in the hospitality industry, worked for a 5-star hotel in downtown Detroit. I was a corporate sales manager where I called on General Motors and Ford and had high-end clients that used our facilities. I had the opportunity to move to Florida to open a resort just outside of Sanibel Island. It was right up before the causeway. And in that process, there were some really good lessons I learned and lessons that I carry with me in any job I've ever done. And that is that you treat your customers like they're guests, and to be hospitable and to treat them like you're having them in your home. And that's the way I looked at the hospitality industry. I think that that training is something that every person should go through at some point in their life, because I saw such great value in it, is that it is the ultimate customer service. And that's what we do no matter what. When I got into big tech and healthcare, big tech, and I was a principal partner at a consulting firm, it was about the customer and treating the customer. So that's something that I learned first and foremost about being in the hospitality industry. I carried that. Fortunately, I worked really hard, and it's the hospitality industry is also a 24/7 industry, and you get burned out. And I had, before I became a disgruntled employee of hospitality, I had the opportunity to go work in corporate America, and one of my clients recruited me and moved me to Texas. And so I had an opportunity, and they literally would not give me the office keys because I was used to working 7 days a week. They said, until you settle down a bit. We want you 5 days a week, but we want you 100%. So I so appreciated that. But again, that hospitality training is the number one customer service training that anyone can ever have, especially coming out of the 5-star hotel background.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I think, you know, something I've said for a long time, having gone into the restaurant industry in college and right after college, right in those years in that mode there, is that I feel like everybody should do some kind of call center, customer service, hospitality, mm-hmm. restaurant, you know, a retail. So working in a retail store, like in a mall, yep. or something like that, where just even if you do one of those categories, it just makes you appreciate it and be a better customer. Hopefully, theoretically. Yeah. So there's that. And then it's also interesting too, because I have a consulting friend years ago, he wrote a paper because he came from the cruise industry and hiring and HR in the cruise industry. And he identified what he called as the hospitality gene, is you either mm-hmm. have it or you don't, but the desire to help other people. And I love what you said is to treat your customers like guests instead of like customers or clients, and really put their needs first. And I could see where that's an important aspect in the business brokerage world with your clients. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's a balance because the guest isn't always right, but you know, but you need them to not feel wrong, but
right. you know,
it's like, how do you handle that? Cause I'm thinking of like hotel guests, but I'm also thinking of business owners who want something a certain way. And it's like, that's not how
Absolutely.
This works.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. that's, you know, a little bit more on the what I learned in that business is not only, you know, it was also to look for people that had those traits. And so when I moved to Houston, I was a sales manager for Bell South. We ran their corporate cellular program back in the late 80s, early 90s. And I would go to really, you know, we'd take clients out to do fine dining around town. And I would recruit waiters, like really good waiters who just had really good skills. And I would train them how to sell my product. The rest of it, if you had the other stuff and you had the work ethic and the good communication skills that I call them kids because they were younger and, you know, they were making, you know, twice as much as they were making as a waiter.
Yeah.
So I saw that and I continued to recruit those folks because I was young in my career as a manager. And so I saw what I saw in myself that made me successful. And I wanted to bring those people along with me.
So then you moved to Texas, still in hospitality, or did you start the next?
No, I got out of hospitality. Okay.
You got out of that. That's right. Before you got burnt out, before you knew that it was going to go bad.
Yeah.
And then let's talk about the next career season that you had, what happened with that, and again tying it into what you do.
So the next one was Bell South, and I worked for them for a bit, and then I had 8.5 years with ADP. You probably know them as the payroll company, mm-hmm. but I worked for their dealer services, which was more of a tech role. We automated car dealerships. And again, that relationship building to, you know, you've got car dealerships and I was responsible for a good part of Texas. And I had big dealers that had, you know, multiple locations and franchise brands. And then I had the guy that, you know, sold 15 cars a month in Podunk, Texas. and you had to help those people feel comfortable because they were making a major purchase. What we were doing was we sold them computer systems that automated their entire dealership from franchise or from finance to parts and service and inventory and accounting. And so that was the next journey that I had. And then I went from there, and I worked for a big hardware company called Sequent Computer Systems. We got bought by IBM. And one of my clients or one of my partners that I worked with was a big consulting firm called CSC. And CSC was one of the big five consulting firms in the late 90s. And they, I was the principal partner in charge of their healthcare practice. And basically I had, they used to say I had healthcare to death care. I had major hospital systems as clients implementing software and doing training and process change engineering. Again, bringing that people skills, I was able to not only grow my team, but grow my client base. It was the first healthcare practice we had at CSC in my region. So I was responsible for Texas, Houston, Dallas offices in Denver. And then when they say I had death care, I had companies that managed death benefits that you purchased ahead of time to take care of your burial and all that other stuff. So I had a couple of big clients that did that. So that was that. And then Enron happened and our energy practice went under and they closed my whole office. So that was my first experience of exiting non-voluntarily, I should say. And then I went to work for Cerner. And I was at Cerner for 20 years. And we sold and maintained electronic medical records for hospitals. I was an executive in charge of large accounts. I had a great deal of interaction with academics, what we call IDNs, integrated medical or integrated delivery networks, such as Memorial Hermann or CHI, as they call it now, which is the St. Luke's. We had the federal government worked on that when it first started. We finally, after I got off of it, they closed it. And that took 11 years. And so that was the DOD, the VA, and the Coast Guard. Wow. So I think they're still implementing it. But then we got purchased by Oracle, and a good part of our organization in the executive level, those of us who've been around a long time, got the golden parachute. And that's when I decided I was going to reinvest in myself. And a friend of mine was a business broker, and he said, I want you to come work with me. And I'd known Mike for 20 something years. And I was like, yeah, well, we'll see. And finally, I was willing to do it and make that investment myself. And that was almost 3 years ago.
Wow. What was the hardest part with going into business brokerage for you? I mean, obviously lots of experience. What were the challenges that you got through?
I think the biggest thing is to go out and find your first listing. that was the challenge. It's not that I didn't have the skills to do it.
Yeah.
But it was a different type of sale. I had just spent 20 years in C-suites, and I had to bring it down a notch and remember my roots of treating that customer like a guest. And just, you know, going down and walking into a machine shop or a tailor or a screen printer and just saying, hey, you know, show me what you've built, and literally becoming a good listener and learning their story and giving them the confidence to let me handle their listing. It's a big decision for people to exit their business. It's usually, in most cases, it's their largest investment. They haven't invested for retirement. The business is their retirement, and you know, the kids don't want it. And so you know, navigating that nervousness and not only being their business broker, but being their therapist and their accountant and their all the things that they don't know how to do, making sure that their books are clean. And so it was, I think a coach is probably the best way to describe it, to coach them through the process. Getting that first listing, that's the hardest thing. And then it just, we got momentum. And
I know from your industry, talking to enough brokers and watching it, is that there's typically an education, an awareness problem. It's that business owners don't know that business brokers exist. And then if they do, they don't really know what they do. And then they don't know if they provide enough value to want to pay that, right? Like, I think we generally accept what real estate agents do, and we generally accept the commission that you have to pay. Mm-hmm. But if business brokers, like this weird mystery unknown that, you know, again, part of it is awareness. That's the biggest thing you're up against. And then it's interesting because I've seen salespeople in other industries face this, where you go from, what was it, Marriott, and then you're at Bell South, and then you're at ADP, and then you're at a company called Cerner, then purchased by Oracle. So it's big enough of a name where people know who you are. Right. And then now you're a business broker that they didn't even know existed, working for Murphy, which doesn't mean enough to the, you know, the entrepreneur community, right? Like, it's not a household name yet. I know you're working on that too. And so, you know, I'm sure that's a challenge as well, because they're like, okay, who are you? What do you do?
Right. And I think that's very important that you walk them through the process. I've gotten feedback from a lot of clients and potential clients that I'm still working with. And they're like, they never explained that to me. They didn't want me to see how the sausage was made.
Interesting.
And I think that's a mistake sometimes, is that if you don't share that with them, you can't manage their expectations of what happens. Anything from pricing a business to how long it takes to sell. Once you get an offer, how long does it take to fund? You've got to lay that out. And then you have to say, I just want to let you know, this will go faster, is that we can respond quickly to information that is requested, either from me when I'm doing my broker opinion of value, two, we're going through due diligence on somebody that's thinking about buying your business. You have to be responsive. Now, one of the values that I bring is I organize all that, and I am your cushion. You don't have to deal with the hundreds of inquiries that people come in and they're just kicking tires, or I don't mean to offend, or finance bros out there that think they want to go in and tell you that your business is overpriced, or they're going to tell you why it should be cheaper. I want to find people that want to buy your business. I want them to go in and say, I can see myself running this business. I can see myself working here. I can see my family participate. It's, you want to create that energy. And that's part of what I explain to them. There are going to be parts of these that are going to be a real pain in the butt. You know, when you're going to have to go find receipts on something that you expensed, you know, 2 years ago to validate your ad back, you know, start organizing that stuff. Let's get that stuff lined up and know where it is. But it's also going to be, you're going to help me sell your business, because when we do that site visit, you're going to present it and say, this was my vision. This is what I did. This is what I accomplished. This is what I think could still happen in growth. You know, I'm just too tired to do it, or I thought my kids would do it, whatever. I help them create their story. And so, again, and then you get down to that waiting period when, you know, the SBA has got the binder and they're just, you know, it's a stack of files on somebody's desk and they're trying to punch through it and going and saying, you know, and they're like, well, if they don't close by this, you know, I get a customer that says, if they don't close by the end of the month, you know, I'm going to put it back out there and da da da. It's like, nope, we're not going to do that, because then we're going to lose another 9 months. I said, let the process go. So handling their expectations and saying, you know what, stuff is going to happen, especially the last couple of years, SBA loan approval process and funding has been very difficult. But with that said, if you tell them up front, here's worst case scenario, here's best case scenario. We closed one that was a cash deal. We closed it in 42 days.
Wow.
You know, from offer letter to handing over the keys, but it was cash.
Yeah.
Other ones, SBAs were 8-9 months last year. So that's what we have to do. And we have to share what the value is that we bring. It's not just reviewing contracts with them or offers or helping them financially get, you know, their financial house in order. It's about how am I going to plan? When do I get to start my next phase of life as a retired grandparent? And can I book my cruise yet? So.
Yeah. And where with what you do in our conversations, just thinking about it, is not just intermediary business broker. Like you could put intermediary as the job title or even the job description, but where that is even more valuable, important, like you said, when there's hundreds of offers coming in and that business owner is still trying to run the business, hopefully their foot is still on the floor.
On the gas.
Yeah. And they're still trying to get it done. They haven't totally checked out yet, because then that's another mess, you know, as far as expectations go. But hopefully they've got the pedal to the floor and they're still moving. They don't want to deal with that, having to filter, having an intermediary, but also like preparing the business, like you were saying, for the buyers out there and you being able to look around corners, which is why it's fascinating, why I want to start with your experience and the hospitality and the everything that you've done to get to this point where you've seen enough business, you understand how it works, where you can help prepare that package in a way that will help a buyer, right? And ease that kind of communication back and forth. And then
I think Jason, on that note, before I forget, so when you think about when we used to manage big installs, big hospitals go live, they flip the switch at midnight. You talk about being in order. It, you know, part of it was to make sure that they had laptops for all the nurses and they had, you know, printers and they had, and these are the things that they, you know, would forget to do. and so basically I would go through the checklists and say, you're ready to go, or you're ready to go, but there's going to be some people that won't be able to log in because they haven't finished training, or, you know, what are the what ifs? I do the same thing with my business clients that are my sellers, to say, okay, give you an example. I had a commercial lawn equipment company. And they had flooring. We had to move all the flooring to the new owner, which means that we had to make sure that they had applied for credit. We had to make sure that on that date that, you know, there was no outstanding balance on anything, that all bills were paid, that, you know, there was no debt sitting for the new owner. You know, knowing that what those steps were in order to make that closing happen, they don't know that. And that's part of what we do as brokers, to make sure that the transition happens, make sure that there's training set up. And so, you know, it's more than just going and listing a business. It's more than just evaluating the business value. You got to understand the business. Otherwise, the closings don't happen.
And I think that's where this is my words, horror stories come in. You kind of alluded to some of them, which is where a business owner might enlist a real estate agent, 17 states.
Yep.
At most, you have to be a licensed realtor. And so some licensed realtors out there think, hey, if I can sell a house, I can sell a business. And if you have enough experience in it, maybe, right? It's not saying it's not possible, but it's totally different. And again, to your point, it's not just about picking a value, listing it, putting it on an MLS, and then just negotiating with buyers, right? There's so much more to that. And then there's the, you know, the balance between the new brokers who might just be trying lots of things, or what I refer to as the used car brokers out there who are just talking people into listing, putting it out there, and then seeing what happens, which kind of leads to what you said in passing a little bit ago about, you know, some of those clients you have now, some of your current guests who are staying with you or have stayed with you as a result of what might have happened with them in the past, right? And so where that expectation, you're setting a different expectation. And I'm sure that's challenging because maybe they had a bad taste about a broker, and then you're there to help, you know, correct that.
Yep. Yeah, I think the real estate example, the realtor example is good. I you know, trade referrals with real estate folks. They're part of my network. But I've seen businesses not sell when a realtor puts, because they think the property is for sale, when they put a big sign out there, and they don't see the value of the business because they don't. I said, let me do the business side. You know, you take the real estate side, I'll do the business side, and at least we'll sell the value of it, and it'll help support the value of real estate. There's a place down the road for me that's a realtor tried to sell, and the owners got tired and they closed it, and now it's just an empty restaurant. You know, and it's, instead of doing the right thing and marketing correctly, you know, now it's an empty building.
Now it's gone.
And it's gone. Yeah. And you can't sell it as a business anymore. All you can sell it is, you know, with assets, you know, stoves and fryers and the land it sits on.
Yeah. Now it's an equipment fire sale.
Yep.
It's just sitting there, and every day it sits there unused. It's all that stuff is just getting worse. Right.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't get better. It's not going to age better by just sitting there. And then the other value I think about with you too, is that where, and you know, this is for anyone tuning in, both a business broker and wanting to add more value, but also, you know, business owners, anyone in this realm, I just think of where you are also helping buffer in between the buyer and the seller, because sellers, not just because they don't want to go find the receipts from a couple of years ago, but can get defensive when they feel like they're questioned about their business or things are pointed out about their business. And the buyer's just doing what buyers do. They're usually more experienced as a buyer than sellers are as sellers. And then sellers can get defensive or not want to do anything different in their business or provide this or have to explain this. Or I know you have stories you've told me offline of like things that you've had to tell sellers to do. Like, no, you really need to do this, or this thing is not going to sell.
Right.
Right. And so you've got to play that. That's the intermediary part and really what it means.
Like, well, that's the other thing is you always have to, this is what I tell people. Sometimes you just have to take a beat. You present something to a seller that is maybe a negotiation or a term or a request for information, and their first reaction sometimes is grouchy and grumbly, and they're like, "Oh, I'm not sharing that with them, blah blah blah." And you just let it rest and say, you know, it's really important that we get this, and let me know how I can help. And you hang up and you follow up with them the next day, and then it's in your email. You know, it's like they're selling their business because they're tired and and they've done a good job. And it's like one more thing. you know, this one business, you know, these guys have been in it for 55 years.
Wow.
And it ran like clockwork. I mean, it was a well-run business, but it was like, it was still a little old school. You know, they were still writing checks and they were still doing, there were a lot of paper files, and to go and find stuff was a little bit harder to do. So that's where some of the grumbliness came from. It's like, oh, I want to go look for that, you know? And when they saw, you know, they found it the first time they looked for it and it was like a non-issue. You know, there's, you know, I've had that particular sale, the buyer did not have a broker, and he was, you know, super bright and came out of a big MBA program at Rice University. And they have a whole crew of guys and gals over there that are want to be, you know, entrepreneurs, and there's courses for it. And, you know, he knew how to do evaluations, but he still had issues. He needed help with things like negotiating the bank that he was using and negotiating, you know, what he needed to do to apply for the flooring and the credit lines and that kind of stuff. So I was working with him as much as, not as much, but almost as much as I was working for my own client. My seller was first. He was the one that hired me, but I knew the deal had to get done. So I needed to help the buyer to get through his hurdles. And now they're all friends and they hang out. And
I think that, you know, goes back to something you've mentioned a couple of times. You talked about early on, which is the guest mentality, right? And it's a guest, but also everyone is the guest. So yes, you have your clients, the one that you have more of the responsibility to, right? Where, you know, that's the one that you're representing and you're a part of facilitating that on their behalf. But we're ultimately, it's still got to be a win-win. You got to support it. And if you got to help both sides get their homework done to get the deal done versus like, well, that's not my problem. You're not my client. So good luck with that. Like that would be pretty short-sighted and only effective if you have an unlimited number of qualified buyers. Before a seller ever speaks to you, they look you up. They scan your name. They search your LinkedIn. They read your last few posts. And in about 60 seconds, they decide whether you feel like a trusted advisor or just another broker. Most brokers never see that moment, but it happens every day. That's why we built the Digital Impact Assessment. It's a structured evaluation of how your online presence actually shows up in four ways: authority, positioning, visibility, and engagement. And if you want to know what sellers are seeing before they book a call with you, just remember you can't improve what you don't measure. All right, now back to this amazing conversation. That would be pretty short-sighted and only effective if you have an unlimited number of qualified buyers that you know, you didn't need to put any effort into it, which of course.
Although we did. I mean, this guy was great and I wanted him and his family to own this business. So it was, but I had 475 leads on this particular. So he knew, and I reminded him that all the time. Don't mess this up because there's a long line behind you.
Don't mess this up. I'm officially helping you. I want to see you win. I also don't need you as much as you need me. So keep that in mind.
Like, what's great about it is that he also gave me a referral. He actually wrote me a referral and he wasn't even my client.
Yeah. I love
it. So two other buyers. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. And I think when you do that kind of thing, you're just putting good effort and good things out there, and then it will work out. Especially if it's a, you know, in this case here, if it's a buyer that the seller likes and wanted to move forward with, then it's ultimately still on their behalf in service of your seller, because that's who they want to sell it to. So it takes a little effort. I want to shift a little bit. So you get into brokerage 3+ years ago, you're winning awards, you're doing great, like things are good. And, you know, I know there's always ups and downs with running a business as a business. For you, where is the value in the partner that you have? Because I know that your partner is more of the finance accounting focused one. Right.
Yeah, he is.
And I'm pretty sure you're more of the client focused sales networking side of the equation. And so where is that a good pairing? Where is that valuable, you know, as something that really then extends to your guests and the value for them as well?
Yeah, I think there's two things about. First of all, he shared so much knowledge with me, and you know, what I brought to the table, you know, he definitely filled the gaps with the first couple of deals. And he came from a background, Mike came with a background. He was, he did big mergers and acquisitions prior to purchasing the franchise in Houston. And He's also very technically, he has a lot of technical knowledge. Like, he's really embraced AI. I mean, I tease him that he goes and talks to his girlfriend. We named her. Her name is Scarlett. and he does. And he's learned to do some really cool things. He's also he's dragged me along, I would say. I'm more apt to use it. And I use it for things that I think is important. But he's a finance guy. He can look at stuff and he can you know, give you a range of value on a business, you know, like nobody else I know. He also understands legal and contracts. And which I do also, based on my experience, and our contracts from my past life were hundreds of pages long. Ours aren't that complicated. But he understands things that would be specific to liabilities, some of the legalese that we face around prior conditions, you know, things that he's educated me on. And I push him out of his comfort zone a little bit. And we, you know, I'm dragging him a little more into social media. I was teasing him this morning. He created a post through AI around an April Fool's post, a social media post for us. And I said, "Oh, I said Scarlett doesn't have much of a sense of humor, does she?" He goes, "Well, she was funnier, but I pulled the reins back on her a bit." So he gets that. He knows what questions to ask. We recently did a retreat. We went off to Palm Springs and rented a house and sat at the kitchen table or out in the backyard for 3 days. And we worked on our plan. And again, the strengths that he brings and his analysis and his articulate approach to putting a plan together and what is the perfect client. And I'm more of a touchy-feely and relationship, and I spend probably more time, you know, in relationship building. Not to say he has great relationships, because he's a trusted advisor. I don't know as much as he does. He's been in it 17 years, and I ask him questions all the time. But I think we make a really good team. I drag him out of his comfort zone, and he drags me out of mine.
Yeah, I see that as being very valuable, especially with enough overlap where it's not two completely different, like, focus within the business. So enough overlap, but then also enough differences and value to the business, but also to the clients. From what I've seen, the most successful brokerages and brokers out there have a team, right? Instead of one person trying to do everything for everybody, right? Like, it's really tough to be a single parent. And so if you're a single broker trying to help clients and do all of it, the touchy-feely, the accounting, the analysis, the legalese, you know, it's tough. There are people who can do that well, but it's really tough to do everything for everyone in in all the ways. So I think it's fun. Like, the moment you described that dynamic, I was like, okay, that's a good one, because you're definitely going to be a little more, like you said, touchy-feely, a little more relational, more likely probably the one to go to the networking meetings and do the speaking and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, which is important, which is important. And we have to have that. And I mean, he's the president of our local TAB. You know, he is a dynamic speaker. I probably am a little more comfortable in that zone and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because I'm here with you today telling you my stories. So
I know you're here. So I should do a part two with just him and see how what he has to say. So speaking of which, in the broker side, I know something that's also important to you, which is an interesting dynamic to think is fascinating, is the women in business broker kind of category of focus, right? And where that is. in your, I know it's only been a few years that you've been in the industry. Have you seen it shift much? Have you seen the dynamic away from what we could all just picture in our mind as the standard business broker, or if you Google business broker, what most look like, and you know, versus some diversity, like what have you seen in
I'm starting to see some more diversity. I mean, when I walked into my first meeting, and I have gray hair. I mean, I could fit into some of the categories, but there were a lot of good old boys. there were situations that, and I've hung with that group. I mean, I called them car dealers for a long time. And so I understood the dynamic. The change in the folks that are getting into it now, you know, some of our top performers this year were women in at Murphy. There's an office in the Midwest that it's three gals, and they work together, and they're dynamic, and there's just a different energy, and they do things like I like to do. So I'm a big, I bring closing gifts, personalized closing gifts. This is what women have a tendency of doing. I'm not saying men don't do it, but when I do it, it's like, oh yeah, I used to do that, and I don't do that anymore. And it's like, but how do you ask for referrals? I mean, it's part of the whole thing. So you're seeing a little more of that. I want to say a softer, I'm not the softest person in the world, but there's a little bit of a softer touch, a little more you know, I bring homemade cookies, you know, and if I show up without them now, it's like, where are my cookies? but it's a dynamic that is changing. I saw it in technology too. I mean, when I was at ADP, I was the only woman salesperson in the United States.
Wow.
In the second year I was in there, I won a car because I was the number one rep that sold to Ford dealerships. I mean, it was like, it was now there's all kinds of women that work for that company, but it was that transition, you know. It was kind of like when I got into corporate America, and when I was at CSC, you know, it was me and seven guys in leadership. And I think I got the job because I played golf. I mean, literally, I brought a lot of things to the table, but I could hang with these guys. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we had to be willing to do that, but we also need to be able to say, justify, yeah, I'm going to take the call from the woman who's had her business for 25 years and she's upset about something, and I'm going to take that call on Sunday night, where some people won't. And it's just kind of what we do, where there's some nurturing skills that we have. But I think we're going to see more success. We just brought a Houston area. We just brought another gal on. I haven't had a chance to meet her in person, but you know, I'm seeing that movement. And you know, I'm seeing it. They're good networkers. But it's a little bit of that nurturing that I think that we get, and it's not everybody has it. I mean, our 26-year-old, you know, she'll do anything, but don't make me get on the phone or go see somebody, talk to her in person. That's not her thing.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I've seen some change. I think the biggest thing is, again, we talked earlier about the investment. Mm-hmm. You know, if you are a single mom, who I talked to, a single mom who's who was thinking about becoming a broker, you know, you're like, does she have that nest egg where she could go in and, you know, put shoes on her kids' feet and send them to school and still pay the mortgage for a year while she gets her first sale.
Yeah. And I think it's great to hear that it's changing. I've seen that in other industries where it changed. And I think it is especially powerful when there's a woman who has the sales persuasive and like the tenacity. I don't want to say aggressive because most people don't like aggressive salespeople, but you know, when a woman has those traits that they can apply to this sales role, which is what it is, it's a sales role that then also has this transaction component versus like the woman you said in your office where like, don't have them talk to people. But if you have that dynamic combined with the general bias towards nurturing and the gift giving, which if you study love languages, the gifts could be gifts or acts of service, and it falls under that. And that's, you know, that's a very common thing. And so where is that powerful? And then the other thing I've always said for years running sales teams, like I have in the past, is that any woman on a sales floor who knows what to do from a sales perspective will crush every man out there with their eyes closed, because no one expects them to be like, have any bad intentions or anything like that. So the trust level already starts higher, which then means you can then get to business and get to moving forward, right? It's you know, like I say, there's no Wolfess of Wall Street, right? There was no women in Boiler Room.
Right? Right.
There's no feeling like a woman's going to try to rip you off, like, you know.
Yeah. And there are some out there, but I think it's just, you know, being a good listener, not looking at your watch, you know, when you're in a meeting. And it's like, I know when I go see some clients, it's like, I know I'm going to be there, you know, 2 or 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they hug me when I leave the door and give me I've got one client, potential client that, you know, they're a tortilla factory. And I sit and talk very slowly to her because I don't speak Spanish and her English isn't great. And you know, I walk out with a big bundle of tortillas and a big hug. And you know, when she gets ready, I know I'm the person she's gonna list with. Yeah. It might not be this year, but it might be next year.
when it's time, it'll be time, and the relationship's there. And that's the long game aspect of business brokerage as well. Which is fascinating and valuable if you play the long game, right? You got the deals, like you said, that close quickly, 42 days, all cash. That's great when it happens. Otherwise, you know. If you're listening to this and thinking, I want this level of authority, I just don't have the time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. And that's what we build for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and authority signals, everything you need that we've talked about here. So if you want this impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it would look like for your business. Now back to the episode. When it's time, it'll be time, and the relationship's there. And that's the long game aspect of business brokerage as well, which is fascinating and valuable if you play the long game, right? You got the deals, like you said, that close quickly, 42 days, all cash. That's great when it happens. Otherwise, you know, it's the
long game. Deal was on the market for over a year. We closed it in 42 days.
Got it.
But we restructured it. We had to restructure that deal. And that's something you got to be willing to do too, and explain the value of that to your client when something is out there is not selling. We have to think about why.
And that's an important thing too for new brokers or people thinking about coming into the brokerage, and even business owners who are thinking about listing, is be careful of those highlights, the highlight reels you hear. It's like, oh, I sold the business in 42 days. It's like, you closed it, but how long did the whole process take? What was all involved? Right. Going back to what you said about setting proper expectations, so people know, you know, this end of the spectrum or this end of the spectrum of, you know, what could happen during the whole transaction.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think people would say you could put a guide together of what to expect when you sell your business. And I don't think you could do that. I think you have to sit down and be able to answer questions with them.
I know there's several brokers that I've talked to out there who either have tried or want to try to put together that seller's guide, that business owner's guide to selling their business. And then the sheer volume and mass of what that would look like to cover every scenario for everything just becomes overwhelming, right? It's much easier to write a book about buying a business. And there's plenty of gurus out there who sell those books. Like that's a much easier thing. That's why they've taken that approach versus trying to sell it.
They have whole courses on it. You get an MBA on it.
On buying it, but not
at Rice University. But not
selling it. owning it and not selling it. Like good luck with that part. Like that's still a mystery. Nobody knows. Yep. Nobody knows how that works. So, all right, well, let's move to the next section. I'm excited to hear what you have for this, especially because, again, what's fascinating, we're going to get into the broker growth. So these are the, like, not just marketing tips, but like the business growth, the pipeline growth from a marketing, from a sales perspective. So anything that, but what I love about your dynamic is that you've been doing this for a few years. So not a lot, right? Like your partner, Mike, he's been doing it for 17 years. Other brokers have done it for a long time. So what they've done and figured out is different. What you figured out in a few years is different. Obviously you had a great year, top producer 2023. And so it's leading into this, which I think is you know, potentially valuable as well for maybe new brokers or people who have hit that plateau. They're not getting above a certain number of deals, or they have one of those, you know, years where it goes great and efforts on transactions. And then all of a sudden you hit that slump afterwards. And then how do you?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. And that, and I'm in that right now. I sold everything that I had, last year. And I'm basically, you know, I'm starting over. I'm out hunting again. And so I've got a bunch of prospects and I've got a lot of stuff that's in the hopper. And, you know, a couple of them will probably come on board in the next month or so. And then a couple of them will come in 6 months. That's what you have to do. And, you know, last year was an incredible year for me. And very busy. And what I did was I continued to have those kind of long-term clients that I knew would be in the pipeline. I didn't have the short-term clients. And so I'm working really hard right now and I'm reaching out to my, my networks and my old clients, and my referral base is really great too. I mean, my referrals are coming in and it's because they're talking about it. Cause like one client just got back from Mediterranean cruise and like somebody said, well, God, I thought you were working at blah, blah, blah. Like, no, we sold our business and we made this money and now we're gone for 45 days or something like that. So, you know, that's the stories I love to have. But you have to, the art, and this is something that I wish I would have done differently last year. I mean, I brought in almost $11 million in business last year, but I was heads down and focused on, there weren't enough hours in the day. I did 3 closings in 42 days, 45 days. And it was all that leading up to it. So what I still did was I still networked and I still did some outreach, but I wasn't doing buyer searches. And we didn't talk about that. Buyer searches are important to what we do. And a lot of brokers don't do them. And buyer search is one of the reasons I got my largest deal last year. I had a buyer that went in and I found a business for, but in that buyer search, I also got a bunch of other leads to people that were potentially interested in selling their business. It took a year of calling that guy every month to say, you ready? Are you ready? You ready? And then 12 months later, almost to the date, he says, I think we're ready.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that buyer search for somebody else on a business I closed 18 months earlier turned into a sale. And so those are the things you have to keep doing. You got to keep your Rolodex going. You got to work your CRM. You got to make sure that you don't let your contact dates get stale. I think we talked a little bit about this, you know, some key things that you need to do every week. Like I do Marketing Monday, and I get up and I'm still in my sweats and I'm having my coffee, and I literally go out and say, okay, what am I going to do to raise my visibility? What am I going to do? Is it social media? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, LinkedIn? Is it a mailer? Is it, you know, bagging cookies to go to a local chamber event? You know, it's what am I going to do this week? I did something for, like referrals, you know, we pay a referral. You know, you might not own a business, but I bet you know somebody that owns a business. And I did, you know, something during Mardi Gras that said, hey, you know, it had beads on it and said, hey, how about you throw me a referral and I'll throw you some beads or something like that. But I think the most important thing out of this is to remember, no matter what, is understand your brand. And this is something that I've always done in my entire career. My brand, I might have worked for Cerner/Oracle, or I may have worked for ADP, but Robin Brown had a brand. And now I really have, I work for Murphy Business as a franchise participant, but my brand is me. And so what the first thing you need to know is you need to tell everybody what you do for a living. Because that cash sale I got last year is because I told an owner of a laundromat that I dropped my dry cleaning off, that she knew that I had changed jobs, and she asked what I was doing, and I explained to what a business broker was. So I told her what I did. And then she in turn invited me to go meet her husband, and I told him what I did. You know, we closed that deal. They took me to dinner.
I love it.
Because I changed their mind. But anyway, so tell everybody what you do. That's okay. The first thing you got to do every day, no matter who you meet. Cocktail parties, networking events, friends of friends. I got a referral last Friday from a friend of mine whose son-in-law knows this guy that wants to buy a pool company. I mean, it's like, because I talk to my friend about what I do, and then she tells her son-in-law what I do. That's a big network. And I know a lot of people. But, you know, we love to cruise. That's one of our vacation things. I talk to, you know, probably 50 or 60 people on a cruise because I eat dinner with them or I'm sitting next to them at a pool. It always comes up, what do you do?
Yeah.
I got a referral from a guy that is does team photography for young sports teams, like Little League and that kind of stuff. It's because I sat down and had a beer with this guy. So, you know, you always tell people what you do. Remember your brand.
Got it. Okay.
And then always remember that someday a seller will sell their business. They'll either close it or they'll sell it. And you know what? If they know you and feel comfortable with you, they're going to call you up and say, Robin, I'm ready. Or can you do what you did for the Smarts? Or Christy told me, you know, changed her life. She was very nervous about selling and you made her feel good. So always nurture your relationships because you never know when they're ready to sell.
Which I think is interesting. And the big key that change that's from like an impossible, overwhelming task of how do you keep track of everyone? How do you stay in touch with them? Like, how do you be just the right amount of on top of somebody's mind or in their mind when that moment comes without being annoying or pushy or constant is the use of a CRM technology, reminders. You know, some of it can be automated. Some of it is just a thing that pops up and says, call this person or go visit.
Yeah. And I need to do that. I need to do more of that. I need to automate more, you know. I mean, you made sure I wasn't going to miss this meeting today.
That's for sure.
But I'm also big on, I send text messages. I'd send, you know, Happy New Year with some goofy picture of me doing something stupid. Hope you and your family are having as great a New Year as I am. or, you know, just, I treat them like friends and relatives. I send them the same message to my relatives. So,
and I think that's important, right? Because people want to do business with humans, despite what the AI contingent will say. We want to deal with a human. We want to get to know somebody and do business with people we know, like, and trust. So I think that's important. And, you know, it's okay to just be a human. It doesn't always have to be perfectly polished and business-like. Like, there's a balance there. And then I think it's also important too, because this is the cautionary thing, because I see this with others too, is where when the pipeline gets lean, going through the phone, going through the Rolodex. If anyone doesn't know what that is, just Google it. I won't get into it. But
I don't have one anymore.
I know. But, like, you know, that list of people you're just going through is like, who haven't I talked to in a while? Let me just like hit this all of a sudden. And what I appreciate about your mode that you're now, which is the Marketing Mondays, which is what can I do this week intentionally, and having a system that then, you know, grows and you do, instead of in that moment, because again, the challenge is you're playing a game where there is no one call close that gets you revenue today as a business broker, right? Nope. Like, if you're lucky, 3 to 6 months, if someone says, yes, I'm ready, like, let's talk about value, then it's still not instant, which means you've got to constantly be doing this. You got to constantly be planting seeds.
Absolutely.
Know, to be able to harvest down the road.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I have clients that are trying to get their businesses ready to sell. I mean, it's
good.
I've given them homework.
Yeah. And I think that's important too, because it goes into, again, being ready, having a business that somebody would want to buy at the price that you are hoping to achieve. Because I think fundamentally, pretty much every business is sellable, just might not be for what they're thinking it's worth, right?
That's where you have to manage their expectations.
Yeah.
And I've got one guy, and I call him still, and I said, well, do you still think your business is worth $5 million? I have somebody that would like to buy it, but they're probably not going to pay you $5
million. No.
And they laugh at me. And they said, yeah, well, we'll keep talking.
We'll keep talking. We'll keep waiting. And you know what the best outcome and the hope is, that they're doing things to prepare their business for it to actually be worth $5 million, not to get defeated and get ready to settle for less, right? I guess from my side, I would hope, okay, they're doing their part. Make it a $5 million business.
And this is something that, you know, being a realist with your prospects is really important, mm-hmm. because there are folks that will tell them their business is worth $5 million and list it and charge them a big retainer.
Yeah.
And nothing happens. And then they wonder why. And there are brokers out there like that.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I appreciate you sharing all these growth tips and the marketing side and the transparency, you know, from your side with the ups and downs. And it's fascinating to think of you essentially liquidating all the showroom floor assets last year. Yes. Like, now we gotta get some new things in the store. We gotta stock the shelves, right? Like,
we gotta stock the shelves.
We gotta get that going, right? And then, you know, the lessons from that, I appreciate you sharing. I think this is a great place. I want to stop our main conversation. Everybody who tunes in the show knows that we also do an after show. In the after show, I want to talk to you about the deal that got away. I also want to talk about the standard after show questions. And then we're going to talk a little bit about recruiting and those efforts, because I alluded to it early on. We kind of talked about it. But a fascinating kind of dynamic coming to the business brokerage industry that I know that you're working with on behalf of Murphy. So I think that'll be fun. We'll talk about that in the next episode. For people who want to get in touch with you, Robin, I know the best ways, there's murphybusiness.com/Central Houston, which is your region. You're also on LinkedIn, obviously, Robin Brown. Your email will be in the show notes. I know if they just search Robin Brown, Murphy Business or Central Houston, they will find you and everything else that you're doing. And I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you sharing all this. I'm excited because, you know, obviously this is a great conversation. Hopefully it's valuable to people out there, but I think it's also great because you bringing everything into this season of your career and life to help business owners and help them, you know, exits and what that means. And again, away from the bad brokers or the non-existent brokers and all the havoc that reaches that causes. So I appreciate you being here and sharing all this on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Jason. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. And for everyone tuning in, please make sure to reach out to Robin, follow her online, check out the information that she has. And then let's just get more of this out there. You know, I say this all the time. I just want to promote this as the conversation with a professional like Robin and really uplift the industry as a whole, because there's really very little standards to it of what's acceptable, not acceptable. And I would love to this just be like the foundation for what great looks like. And this kind of conversation with Robin is that. So for everyone tuning in, I appreciate you being here. And until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.